Hi everyone, welcome back to Coffee and Crime with me, Colette, and you said
Me,
Izzy.
Izzy.
It's because you normally say it first,
Yeah.
it threw me off. So we just recorded Izzy's episode, which was on the Somerton Man.
Was gonna
Forgot.
say, forgotten already, yeah.
So we're quite exhausted, so this could be a complete mess. Hopefully not, because I'm excited for it.
Yeah,
And
I'm
if we have
excited
to
too.
just delete this whole episode, I'll be bummed.
I'm sure we won't. Oh, it's gonna be good. Come on.
So, the person I'm doing today, they aren't a serial killer or a murderer in like the typical sense. They
Yeah.
are called Charles Luciano, nicknamed Lucky Luciano, which is what I'm going to be referring to him as like throughout this whole thing. And the reason I chose this is because a few weeks ago I went to New York and I thought it'd be cool if I did like a one that's based in New York. It doesn't
Yeah,
even mention
okay.
New York that much. I just thought it'd be fun. So, Lucky Luciano was born as Salvatore Luciano on the 24th of November, 1896, in, this is going to be such a hard episode for
Oh
pronunciations, La
God.
Cara Fridi in Sicily, Italy.
Okay, yeah.
I definitely butchered that real bad. And he's one of the most powerful organized crime bosses in
Ooh.
America in the early 30s,
Yeah.
and his like legacy continued into the 50s and 60s. And there's like, I'm going to discuss this more later, but like, he's often compared to Al Capone. They're like the two big, and obviously we know about Al Capone from history class.
School.
Yeah, he emigrated to the Lower East Side of Manhattan, New York, in 1906 with his parents, and that was when he was nine. But apparently he struggled in school because he couldn't speak English. So I think he used to get kind of bullied and stuff.
Yeah.
So he turned to crime.
Okay,
Natural
yeah.
thing to do. And he began charging his classmates for this was like his first touch. Taste, that's the word
Touch of
it
crime.
is. First taste
Yeah.
of crime. So he used to charge his classmates to be their security guard, basically. So his classmates would pay him for protection.
What, to be like a bodyguard?
Yeah.
But that's, at least that's not too crimey, because.
And if they didn't pay, he would beat
Oh.
them.
Okay.
Yeah. So like once you start paying, basically you're a bit stuck.
Oh, you have to keep
Yeah,
going.
because he'll beat you up
Oh,
if yeah,
God.
so it's like a bit it's not illegal to like charge people for your protection, I don't
No.
think, but it was a bit
Forcing them to pay,
manipulative,
yeah.
yeah. So by the age of 10, he had already begun petty crimes like mugging, shoplifting, and extortion. Something all 10-year-olds do.
Wow, yeah, that's quite soon to
Yeah,
begin
also,
with.
he'd only been in New York a year, so like he hadn't had that much time to
Yeah.
establish himself. At 14, he dropped out of school. I saw a thing that said in 1914, but then that would have made him 28.
Okay,
Oh,
so
wait, no, it would have made him 18, but that
yeah,
didn't
but
make
that's not
sense
dropping
either,
out, is
yeah,
it? Yeah.
so. And then another website said at 14, so I was like, makes
Trust
sense.
that, yeah.
At 14, he dropped out of school and began working as a clerk at a hat company, which he earned $7 per week.
Was that good at the time?
I don't know, because obviously to me that doesn't sound like much, but then this
But
is
yeah.
19 something. I can't be bothered to work that out. Like 1911. So, yeah, that is, especially for a 14-year-old, that can't be
Yeah.
bad. But he won $244 in a dice game,
Oh, okay.
which I don't really understand what a dice game is, but I assume it's like
Gambling.
gambling, yeah. Which led him to quit his job and start criminal enterprises.
Wow.
In his teenage years, he founded his own gang and was a member of the Five Points Gang, which was unlike other gangs. So basically, most gangs in New York were like taking part in petty crimes, so like thefts and stuff. But the Five Points Gang offered protection to Jews from basically in New York, there were like three main gangs: Jewish gangs, Irish gangs, and Italian
Yeah.
gangs. So the Five Points Gang offered protection to Jews from Italian and Irish gangs
Okay.
because the Italian and Irish gangs were beating up Jewish kids.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
So they offered protection to them for 10 cents per week. Which, if you think,
Was that their gang action? I'm guessing there was more.
yeah, it gets worse, but like this. But
Oh.
if you think That's not that bad for a gang. Like, no, but like for a gang, they're not doing anything illegal. I mean, I imagine they probably beat them up if they...
Is that what they're...
Yeah, that is what they did.
Yeah.
And his first arrest was in 1916, so he was 20, when he spent 6 months in jail for selling heroin.
Oh, okay.
And it was around this time. Also, I'm definitely... I try to make sure that, like, his, obviously... I was reading it on Wikipedia and they kept saying prostitute, which I know is a derogatory term, so I tried to change them all to sex worker.
Okay.
If I didn't, please yell at me. Also, pimp, I was like, I couldn't think of an alternative word, so I've used it. So it was around this time, during World War One, that he became involved in pimping and met Meyer Lansky, a Jewish gang member, and Benjamin Bugsy Siegel. It's unknown where the nickname Lucky came from, but it's believed because in the 1920s he was severely beaten by three men and his throat was slashed.
Oh my.
He had a permanent scar because he refused to work for another mob boss, so it's believed that that's where Lucky came from, because he survived. Or it could just be a mispronunciation of Luciano, but
yeah, it sort of sounds like Luciano.
It's probably like a mixture of both, where it's like you survive something, and then you're like, oh, I need a nickname, and then you're like, sounds like my son. Yeah. And in his lifetime, he was arrested 25 times for crimes, including assault, illegal gambling, blackmail, and robbery, but was never imprisoned. That is correct. I was like, prohibition is heavily linked in with his life. So, if you don't know, Prohibition began on January 17th, 1920, with the enactment of the 18th Amendment, and it ended in...
I don't know my history, I'm sorry. 1933?
Prohibited the manufacture, sale, and transportation of alcohol, which basically led to an increase in criminal activity as bootlegging, speakeasies, and moonshine grew. So, a lack of enforcement... This wasn't in the article, I need this from my own knowledge, so...
Wow, that's so impressive.
Thanks. A lack of enforcement agents and poor wages for those enforcement agents basically meant that they were easily bribed, and so organised crime grew, particularly in New York and Chicago, where Al Capone is from. So, whilst he was in the Five Points Gang, which is the one from earlier, he met Vito Genovese and Frank Costello, who were both mafia leaders.
That's quite cool names.
I know. Genovese is such a good... And Costello. These are nice names. And Luciano was recruited by Joe Mazzeria, who comes in later. This is one of the confusing ones.
Yeah.
Who is a Lower Manhattan gang boss, and he was recruited as a gunman in 1920.
Mm.
So Joe Mazzeria recruited him as one of the gunmen for his gang.
Okay.
Luciano also began bootlegging for Arnold the Brain Rothstein with several of his friends, and Luciano, Costello, and Genovese, who were the people who were the mafia leaders he met, began their own bootlegging team after getting financing from Rothstein, who he was bootlegging for.
Okay, yeah.
So it's confusing. Basically, Rothstein employed them to bootleg for him, but then he gave them financing to start their own bootlegging thing, so I assumed he would get, like, a...
cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, because why, like...
Why else?
Yeah. And Rothstein also mentored him and taught him how to survive in high society, because they were so wealthy that they were going to, like, fancy dinners and stuff.
Oh, okay, that's quite cool.
But he was from a rough background. Or not like, a rough background, but...
Not
like,
that background.
Poor, yeah. So he was mentoring him on how to deal with high society, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
In 1923, he was caught selling heroin by undercover agents, but he didn't receive any jail time. But it did ruin his reputation among the high society. So in order to fix it, he bought... This is really confusing, but there was a Jack Dempsey v. Louis Firpo boxing match, Luis Firpo boxing match, happening in the Bronx. So he bought 200 seats, so basically a massive portion of the seating, and then sold it to gangsters and politicians, which somehow partly fixed his reputation. And then he finished saving it by Rothstein took him to Wanamaker's department store to buy expensive clothes for this boxing match, and this fixed his reputation.
What, going to the show, or getting the nice clothes?
And going and selling tickets to a boxing match. So clearly they weren't too fussed about the fact that he sold heroin, but I find it strange. But by 1925, he was earning over $12 million annually, $12 million, that is, with a net income of $4 million. After he paid off politicians and police. But when I saw the $12 million, I was like, oh my god, that's so much money. Obviously, $4 million is still a ridiculous amount, but that's... He's only keeping that's a third.
That's a huge portion, yeah.
Like, is it what? Well, I guess it is worth it.
A huge portion he's giving away, I mean. Yeah.
Like, he's giving more away than
is
he's...
Is it worth it? Yeah, yeah.
But he's giving more away than he's keeping.
Yeah, but that's just...
I know, it just seems weird to me.
Businesses, don't they? Like, huge businesses have to do that. True. Apparently airline profit margins are 1%. I heard that. That's why they have to keep it so tight.
Oh my god.
That might be false, you can...
Google that in my own time.
No, I'm sure I heard someone say that.
Yeah, that would make sense. So, he and his team ran the biggest New York bootlegging operation, which also ventured into Philadelphia as it grew.
Okay.
And he was importing Scotch whiskey from, guess where Scotch whiskey comes from?
Where?
Scotland.
Oh, I was going to say Scotch whiskey. Oh my god, I was thinking, because, you know, what we learned is, like, they import some from Canada and some from Mexico, and I was like, where's the link?
No, Scotch whiskey from Scotland, rum from the Caribbean, whiskey from Canada. And also he was illegally gambling to get this $12 million a year. He helped in Miseria's gang. So Miseria's the guy that hired him as a gunman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was a gang leader. So he helped in his gang. And this is where it gets confusing. Miseria's main rival was Salvatore Maranzano. So Maranzano and Miseria sound... pretty similar.
Yeah, yeah.
So Miseria is the one that Luciano works for. Maranzano. Miseria, yeah. And Maranzano is the rival. So Salvatore Maranzano was from Sicily and he ran the Castellammarese clan. With a C. Which eventually led to the... So the rivalry between Miseria and Maranzano led to the Castellammarese War. From February 1930 to April 15th, 1931, which by the end of it, both bosses had been killed. So Miseria and Maranzano both died. And both bosses were known as Mustache Pete's, which is such a weird nickname.
What does that mean?
So they were older traditional mafia bosses who were Italian and believed in old world mafia principles, which were honour, tradition, respect and dignity. So they would often refuse to work with non-Italians and didn't like working with non-Sicilians.
Oh, okay.
So like really, really limited social circles. So Luciano didn't like this because he wanted to work with Italian, Irish and Jewish gangs to maximise profits. So he didn't really understand why his boss leaders were only working with Sicilians. He then became involved with the Young Turks, who were a gang trying to get rid of conservatism within gangs. And Luciano grew this mob to include future mob leaders such as Costello, so that's that Frank Costello, and I've forgotten his first name, Genovese.
Vito.
Yes, it was. So they became future mob or they were future mob leaders, and they became involved with the Young Turks as well. And this was the beginning of his goal to create a crime syndicate which involved Jewish, Irish, and Italian gangs in order to maximize wealth, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But I guess the reason the more traditional mob bosses work like that is because if you start including loads of people in your social circles,
or gang circle.
Yeah, you're like more likely to get caught, especially if...
Probably less loyalty as well.
Exactly, because you could be double-crossed by, like, a Jewish gang who secretly wants to get you out.
Yeah.
I guess that's, like, the disadvantage.
Mm.
So in October 1929, which is the same month as the Wall Street crash, which I did not realise. That's true. That is right. Is it? Wall Street.
Yeah, I think so.
Three men forced him into a limo at gunpoint, where he was then beaten and stabbed.
Wait, who?
Luciano.
Whoa, more.
Yeah, so he's already had his throat slashed. Before being dumped on a Staten Island beach. And he survived, but was left with a scar.
Pretty understandable. Yeah.
And a droopy eye. And his attackers were never caught, but in 1953, basically there's like several theories, obviously other gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Would be pretty likely.
Oh, yeah.
Or someone that had, like, double-crossed or whatever. But in 1953, he made... I think it was in a report that someone did, like, he did an interview. And he said that the police attacked him in order to find someone called Jack Legs Diamond, who was, like, a gang member.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And then the press coverage from this attack meant that he became known to the New York public. So more wealth for him.
Also more risk, though.
True. Is it not? Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's wealth. What he wanted. So the Castellammarese War basically continued. So in 1931, Luciano decided he wanted to kill Miseria, his boss.
How come?
Because he was doing poorly in the war. So the two rival gangs were fighting, and Miseria was basically losing. But you couldn't just leave gangs, because then the gang that you previously were in would, like, hunt you down or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is why I personally would never join a gang, cause it's like a lifelong commitment.
Great.
The illegal stuff, obviously. And he agreed with Maranzano, the rival, to organise the death if he got Miseria, so his boss.
Yeah.
If he got his rackets, which I had to Google what a racket was.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what it is?
No.
Mm-hmm. So a racket is basically someone that does the illegal activities, so they were like the bootleggers, or they would like go and kill, basically gang members.
Yeah.
But they get you the most of the profit, so like the profitable side of the gang. So in response for organising this death, he would get Miseria's rackets and become... So basically become the gang leader and become Maranzano's second in command.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
What, so they were just gonna incorporate the gang?
Yeah, basically merge them. So... on the 15th of April, Miseria and two others in the gang were invited to lunch in Coney Island, which after that they played cards.
Mm-hmm.
And Luciano supposedly went into the bathroom, or he'd, from reports of the incident, supposedly he went into the bathroom. Yeah. That's not like... sounded weird. Went to the bathroom while four gunmen who were Genovese, Anastasia, Adonis and Bugsy, who is that Benjamin Siegel guy who I mentioned for two... I think he became friends with him. It was one of his friends.
Oh, yeah, you did mention. Yeah, I do know.
That's fine. There's a lot of names. Yeah, they went in and killed him, which ended the Castellammarese War.
Yeah.
Maranzano then organised crime in New York into five families, led by Luciano... So, like, he'd been upgraded.
Yeah.
Profaci, Gagliano, Vincent Mangiano, and Maranzano.
I think you're doing a good job.
Thanks, it's very difficult. I should have looked some up. And the leaders were supposed to be equal, like, in how much power they had.
Mm.
But Maranzano declared himself Capo di tutti capi. Which is the... don't you speak fluent? Which is the boss of all bosses. And he stated that in an upstate New York meeting that they had.
Yeah.
So basically he said that he was...
the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though they're supposed to be equal. So Luciano felt that Maranzano was even greedier than Miseria had been.
Mm.
So planned to remove him.
Yeah, I mean, what did he expect?
Exactly. So, in September 1931, Maranzano hired Vincent Mad Dog Cole, who was an Irish gangster, to kill Luciano because of the threat on his life. But someone called warned Luciano.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew about it. So what actually ended up happening, so this was like partly the actual plot. So Maranzano ordered Luciano and Genovese to come to his office at 230 Park Avenue on September 10th. But because he knew about the murder plot, he sent four Jewish gangsters instead. And he disguised them as government agents. And Maranzano didn't know them because they were a Jewish gang. And Maranzano was a Mustache Pete.
Oh, so he's using his policies against him.
Exactly. And two of them disarmed Maranzano's bodyguards, while the other two stabbed and shot Maranzano. And it became known as the Night of the Sicilian Vespers.
Oh, that... maybe they rode on Vespers.
No, it's V-E-S-P-E-R-S.
I think maybe it does mean something.
A Vesper is a sunset evening prayer in the Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and Eastern Catholic, Anglican, and Lutheran liturgies of the canonical hours. Ah, yes. A service of evening prayer in the Christian church.
That doesn't help me understand why, though.
No, me neither.
But oh well, let's accept it.
And move on.
Yeah.
So 3 days later, on September 13th, Samuel Monaco and Louis Russo, who were Maranzano's allies,
mm-hmm.
Were found in Newark Bay with evidence of torture.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. Joseph Siragusa, who was the Pittsburgh crime family leader, was shot to death in his home. And Joe Ardizzone. Who was head of the LA family, like crime family, not just a random family, disappeared on October 15th, leading people to believe that Luciano was just going around eliminating bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's a myth. And it was just a weird coincidence. Well, not a coincidence, because they were being murdered by other mobs, but like they weren't linked.
Weird coincidence, like who it was, sort of thing. The fact that there were so many bosses.
No, I think...
was it bosses or was it just people?
No, it was all bosses.
Yeah.
But...
or was there all
the first two weren't bosses. But I think it was just basically, like, loads of mob leaders were being taken out by other mobs.
Okay, yeah.
But everyone thought it was Luciano's gang were taking out all of them. So, he then became the leading crime boss after Maranzano died.
Wow.
Yeah, in the US, because he controlled illegal gambling, extortion, bookmaking, loan sharking, and drug trafficking in New York.
Oh, God.
Don't worry, I googled what these things were, because I did not know. Bookmaking is... do you know what those things are?
Is that just... well, you might as well tell me.
Okay. So, you know, you have, like, bookies. So, basically, people that accept and pay off debts... normally on sporting events.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's illegal, is it? It must be.
Yeah, but are they doctoring?
Oh, yeah, true.
What it says.
It is illegal. Loan sharking is offering loans with extremely high...
yeah, I know what that is.
Interest rates, which were usually illegal. Because they didn't have, like, permission to give out loans.
Mm.
And he also controlled labor union, which are trade unions, activities, and the Manhattan waterfront, which I googled, is 32 miles where you can walk and cycle around Manhattan. So he controlled that. Garbage hauling, construction, garment...
seriously?
Yeah. Garment district businesses and trucking.
Whoa, so everything
a lot
from
of New York
illegal too.
Exactly. I think that's why I found it, like, quite interesting, is because it's like...
He's in control of all the things.
Like, garbage hauling.
Yeah.
If, what happens if he... Imagine living in New York and all of your key things are being controlled by this one guy. It's insane.
And it's a gang leader guy.
Yeah. Well. You just don't pay your gas bill one day and he just turns up at the door. He remained in power by forming unofficial alliances with other mob bosses. And although he didn't like Moustache Pete and their dedication to tradition, he did keep certain things that they did. So the Omerta, which is an oath of silence, protecting crime families from legal prosecution.
Okay.
So basically it's like you take the fifth and you don't speak in court.
Yeah.
And he also kept the five... family New York structure. Five.
Okay, yeah.
Genovese became his underboss, and Costello was his consigliere.
I really don't know.
Which is an advisor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Lansky and Bugsy Siegel were non-Italians, so they couldn't hold official positions within the gang.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Strange.
Then,
they didn't get to advance their careers because they were held back by discrimination.
Yeah.
But they were trusted advisors to him. And one of the things he's like best known for is setting up this thing called the Commission.
Yeah.
So it's set up by Luciano to act as an organized crime governing body.
Okay.
So it was designed to settle disputes and like territory disputes, so which crime families controlled which things. Mm. And it's been called his greatest innovation, which is a weird word for it, because it's an organized crime thing. And he created it to maintain power over the other families and prevent further gang wars.
Yeah.
Even though technically he was a bit responsible for the other gang war because he...
Yeah, but he doesn't want any more because what happened at the end of that one was people dying. And he's at the top, so he doesn't want more gang wars where they're taking out the leaders.
So the original representatives that were, like, members of this commission were the New York Five families,
yeah,
the Buffalo crime family, and Al Capone's Chicago outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah, exciting, Al Capone.
Something I know is something about
I feel like Al Capone is, like, the most well-known.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know anything, I don't know anything about organized crime, but you know who Al Capone is. So later the LA, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Kansas City families joined. So all members were supposed to hold the same power, meaning decisions were made by majority votes. However, in reality, Luciano controlled it, obviously.
Yeah.
So then, the reason he killed Maranzano is because he felt that he was too greedy. But he set up an entire organisation in order to control crime.
Yeah, I mean...
Not only in New York, like Maranzano was, but across America.
But obviously they're greedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he probably felt he was greedy because in order to get there, he'd stepped on... So was it Maranzano?
Yeah.
He'd stepped on...
Oh, true.
Him to get there by betraying him when he'd said we'd be equal partners.
Yeah.
But yeah, still so greedy. I mean...
I feel like it's a bit hypocritical.
But of course, they all want to be...
Yeah, true.
Always want to be at the top.
So in 1935, the commission ordered, through a popular vote, Dutch Schultz to drop his plans to kill Special Prosecutor Thomas E. Dewey as... The commission felt it would cause law enforcement to crack down on organised crime. Because obviously he's a special prosecutor.
Yeah.
And also, within organised crime, they had a rule to not harm police, federal agents and prosecutors.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like a weird thing to have, but...
I wonder why, like, prosecutors. But maybe it's... Is it for the same reason of, like, not wanting... To make trouble for themselves.
I guess it must be. It just seems weird to me.
Yeah.
To have, like... Well, it's not even morals, but I guess, like... Have a rule of that. I don't know. When they don't really care about... anything else, but Schultz refused to drop the plot, so the commission killed him.
Oh, God, okay.
Yeah. On the 24th of October 1935, in a tavern in Newark, New Jersey. But basically, so they told Schultz that he couldn't kill him.
Yeah.
And he then planned to kill not only the special prosecutor, Dewey, but also his assistant.
Mm.
So they were like...
No way.
Yeah. His crime family began small-scale sex working in the early 1930s, around the same time as Dewey, who was the prosecutor.
Sex working as in they were sex working?
No.
Or they were... Oh, is this where the pimping comes in?
Yeah. Mm. So that was in the early 30s, around the same time as Dewey, who was the prosecutor.
Yeah.
Was appointed to combat organised crime in New York. So, like, it was becoming risky. So Dewey and his assistant, David Ash, who was also part of the murder plot, began trying to bring down Luciano, even though he technically saved his life, so he should just let him do what he wants.
True, yeah.
Because he was, like,
just
the most...
don't bother doing a job.
Because he was the most powerful crime boss, they wanted to bring Luciano down. And they planned to do this with the sex working network.
Yeah.
So... on the 2nd of February 1936, Dewey launched a police raid against 200 brothels in Manhattan and Brooklyn, which gave him the...
Was sex work illegal at this point? In brothels?
I have absolutely no idea, but I Must be. Would guess.
Yeah, I think so.
He became known as a gangbuster because of it, even though 10 men and 100 women were arrested. However, they were not released and set bails of... $10,000.
The sex workers?
Yeah.
Were charged?
Yeah.
Okay.
And set bails of $10,000, which obviously they couldn't afford.
Yeah.
So by mid-March, several of them had revealed information about Luciano in order to avoid jail.
Oh, smart, okay.
Yeah, it's smart on the point of the prosecutor.
Yeah, not very nice, but...
No. But then as well, I think that kind of links in with what we said earlier about, like, how if you get more people involved in your criminal activity, that, like...
More people who can tell.
Yeah. So, three sex workers named him as the ringleader of this, like, sex work ring.
Yeah.
However, David Battillo was actually the ringleader in New York, and Luciano got paid from him.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's technically a lie. Although he was, like, still heavily involved.
Yeah.
He was, like, second in command.
Did they know that?
I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah.
If they saw him as the face of it, they probably wouldn't know about the inner workings.
Yeah, because he's not going to want to tell. Like, they arrested 110, but 200 brothels, that's going to be a lot of people. You're not going to tell every single one of them. So, in March 1936... Luciano found out that they were planning to arrest him for this, so he fled to Hot Springs in Arkansas.
Okay.
But this is such a weird coincidence. A New York detective was in Hot Springs, Arkansas, on another assignment, and saw him, and told Dewey, saying that he'd fled to...
Oh, God,
yeah. What a weird...
Weird thing. Be there on another assignment if you're in New York.
It's so, like, such a weird coincidence. But so he notified Dewey and Luciano was arrested on April 3rd.
Right.
And on April 4th, Dewey indicted Luciano and members of the Luciano family on 60 counts of compulsory sex work, which is sex slaves.
Oh, God.
Which is why...
That's terrible.
Yeah, that's why what he was doing was... Well, I mean, even if
it
was illegal...
Wait, so some of the... So, were all of the sex workers, like, against their will?
I think mostly, yeah.
So they still... The Dewey guy...
Yeah.
He still felt okay arresting them.
Yeah, but I guess you don't know that at the time.
Oh, he didn't know that at the time. Oh, okay.
Well, I guess not. Because you don't know what you're going to find out from them until you take them in,
I know,
I guess.
But he held them.
True.
Wouldn't they say straight away? Oh, well, anyway, whatever.
Yeah, true, actually. It was the anyway. 30s.
Yeah, I think we should put it down to that. Questionable morals.
Luciano's lawyers, who were in Arkansas, tried to extradite him, which basically means... So, the crimes happened in New York, but he was arrested in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
But he was arrested by New York detectives and taken back to New York. But the Arkansas lawyers were in Arkansas, and they couldn't practice law in New York.
Oh.
So they were trying to get him brought back to Arkansas for the trial.
Oh.
Because that was where he'd been arrested. But that didn't work. So Arkansas Attorney General was offered a $50,000 bribe to deal with this case.
Wow, yeah.
But he rejected it and reported it.
Ooh.
What a cool guy.
Yeah.
So, probably. I don't know anything else
so
about...
So integrity. And that was so integral. And I was like, I can't speak.
But so, that's $50,000 in 1936.
That's insane, yeah. What's the actual word? So much integrity.
So on the 17th of April, Arkansas authorities sent three NYPD detectives to take him to trial in New York. And in St. Louis... It's in Missouri. Before I said it was an island in the H.H. Holmes episode, I spent like too long talking about getting horses on a boat, but it's not an island. So there was a train transfer in St. Louis where they had 20 policemen like stood around to prevent a mob rescue attempt because obviously he's got like loads of
associates.
Yeah. And they arrived in New York on the 18th of April, and he was sent to jail without bail. Wow, that rhymed.
That was satisfying.
And his pandering trial, which I had to Google what pandering meant.
I don't know what it means.
Procuring sex workers. Oh. So, basically.
Yeah.
His trial began on the 13th of May, 1936, and Dewey accused him of participating in the Combination, which was a massive sex working ring.
Yeah.
And Luciano was exposed for lying on the stand by questioning by the prosecution and telephone calls, which like, didn't match what he'd said.
Yeah.
He also had no explanation for why he claimed he earned $22,000 a year on his tax records.
Oh, God.
So, like...
Well, obviously, though.
Yeah, I know. But, like, he wasn't even on trial for tax evasion, but, like, he basically... I mean...
But that's a difficult one, because even if you want to just pay your taxes, you can't, because the way you've earned the money is illegal, so you can't put it
down. Yeah, true, because if
Yeah, that's the problem, yeah.
If you put... You earn $4 million a year...
Don't want to know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, well...
Catch 22.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He was the victim. He couldn't do it.
Several sex workers have claimed that he actually had no link to the Combination. However, it's difficult because, this is my own note for myself, because crime families are so good at protecting themselves that there are no links between him and this sex ring. But that doesn't necessarily mean he wasn't involved.
Yeah, of course.
Because there's also no links between, like, him and killing people that, I don't know.
Yeah.
So once he was imprisoned, he continued to run his crime family, somehow, I don't understand, through Genovese, but it had to be taken over by Costello, because Genovese fled to Naples in 1937 to escape a murder charge, which I haven't written for some reason. He was first imprisoned in Sing Sing Correctional Facility in Ossining, New York. However, he was then moved to Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora in 1936.
Mm.
And he was assigned a job in the prison laundry.
Okay.
So during this time, he gathered materials to build a church at the prison, which is famous because it's the only freestanding church in the New York correctional system.
Wow, he must have done a good job.
Yeah, but it's still such like a weird, like, I can't picture this massive crime boss just building a
church.
Yeah. Also, earlier I said that he was never imprisoned, which was clearly fake. So,
oops.
I think I meant when he was, like, a teenager, he was arrested 25 times and never imprisoned, yeah. I think. But in this church, two of the original doors from Victoria, which is Ferdinand Magellan's ship, whoever that is, are on the altar. So that's another reason why it's famous.
Sorry, how did they get that?
Good question.
So confusing.
Probably illegally. Actually, definitely illegally, because what are you allowed in prison? Nothing.
But how do you put doors from a ship in? That's not something you can easily smuggle. Oh well.
He continued to appeal until the 10th of October 1938, when the US Supreme Court refused to review his case, leading him to step down from being leader of the crime family, and he was replaced by Costello. So during World War II, he struck a deal with the US government in 1942 because the Office of Naval Intelligence were concerned about sabotage by German and Italian agents in the New York waterfront, which was like the waterfront of New York. And that was controlled by the Mafia. So they were worried that basically the Mafia would let in German and Italian agents.
Oh, okay.
So they struck a deal with Luciano to try and stop that. So he was transferred to Great Meadow Correctional Facility in Cornstalk, New York, for negotiations. In exchange for a reduced sentence, he would assist in providing intelligence to the Navy. Apparently, before the 1943 Allied invasion of Sicily, he provided names of Sicilian Mafia contacts, and this was known as Operation Underworld, which is such a badass name.
Yeah, it is.
Imagine being like you work for the US government.
You can't tell anyone, though.
I would.
Yeah, you can't tell anyone that you're working on it, you'll be fired.
I would want to, because you sound like a badass. But his actual contribution is debated. So, in 1947, the leader of Operation Underworld discounted the value of his help and said he was useless, basically. Whilst a 1954 report by Dewey stated he had been very valuable.
That seems like the less likely.
Yeah, one. That seems like he said
he
it
has
because...
ulterior motives. So.
True. Because he's supposed to be ending organized crime. So. On the 3rd of January 1946, his sentence was reduced for his help. You can't see me, but I'm doing finger quotes.
Yeah.
His sentence was reduced, provided he did not resist being deported to Italy, which apparently he didn't want because he loved America, because he'd like made a life there.
Yeah.
But if you loved it that much, I have a suggestion to not do illegal things.
Yeah, but then if he hadn't started the illegal things, he wouldn't have loved. True. Why not have loved his life so much?
True. But he accepted the deal anyway.
Yeah.
So on February 2nd, 1946, he was transported to Ellis Island by two agents. And I didn't know this before I started researching it, but when we went to New York, we stopped off on Ellis Island and went to an immigration museum.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was talking about how Ellis Island was like where all the immigrants came and went.
Yeah.
So he was taken there by two agents for deportation. And from February 10th to the 28th, he was travelling to Italy. And apparently, this is weird, because he was sad about leaving America. Once he was in Italy, apparently he would pose with US soldiers and tourists for pictures. So, like, they would come up to him and recognise him.
Oh, cool.
And he would pose for pictures.
I thought you were going to say he would approach them just to feel like he was back in America.
No, that would be weird. I mean, it's already a bit weird, but... So, now I have a topic on Havana. No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, you're going to sing.
I think I'm losing my voice so badly that I can't sing anymore. I'd be different. So he secretly moved to Havana, Cuba. in October 1946. This is confusing. So he took a cargo ship to Venezuela, flew to Brazil, flew to Mexico City, flew back to Venezuela, and then got a private plane to Cuba and arrived on October 29th.
Well, okay.
And he was then driven to Havana. But I don't understand why he took, like, four planes.
Yeah.
Like, I get that you don't want to be caught, but surely that looks more suspicious. If they look in your passport and you've just been in, like...
Who knows, yeah.
I don't know. I guess they weren't stamping his passport. He probably wasn't traveling on passenger planes if it was, like, if he wasn't allowed to leave Italy.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true, yeah.
So the reason he moved to Cuba is because he wanted to be closer to the US... Guess why he wanted to be closer to the US.
Oh, to control his gang.
Yes.
So I thought you were saying two as in and also second or something.
So Lansky, one of his associates, was already established as a major investor in Cuban gambling and hotel projects. So that's also another reason he chose Cuba, because he had connections.
Yeah.
And in December 1946, Lansky called a meeting of heads of major crime families for the Havana Conference, which I remember hearing about when I researched Al Capone, which Frank Sinatra performed there. So,
ooh, that's quite cool.
Yeah. All of their alibis was that they wanted to see Frank Sinatra sing. However, they just wanted to see Luciano to discuss crime. And things they discussed, heroin trade, Cuban gambling, and what to do about Bugsy Siegel and his struggling Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas.
Did they want to help him?
No.
Oh.
He was, like, losing profits for the gang, so what to do is probably
what to do about
remove
him.
It took place at the Hotel Nacional de Cuba, and lasted just over a week. So on the 20th of December, Luciano and Genovese, the OG who's been there since day one, had a private meeting during which Genovese tried to convince Luciano to become boss of bosses and let Genovese run everything, while Luciano was just not doing anything but busy being boss of bosses.
Yeah.
And the US government learned that he was in Cuba because he was publicly hanging around Sinatra and he visited several nightclubs.
Right.
Yes.
He just doesn't care. Yeah.
No. So on the 21st of February 1947, US Narcotics Commissioner Harry J. Anslinger notified Cubans that they would block all shipment of prescription drugs unless they expelled him from Cuba.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically everyone in your country is going to have a medical emergency unless you, like, so 2 days later, the Cuban government announced that they had him in custody and he was going to be deported within 48 hours. So it's actually pretty good that they did it so...
I mean, it was effective. Whether
or not
it's okay is a different question.
It reminds me of that vine of, that, I don't know if you've seen it, but that guy that goes like, oh, my mum said that if I don't get my grades up, she's not going to give me my tetanus shot. And he goes, and his friend goes, like, what are you going to do then? And he goes, study, I guess. It's like that kind of, like...
I haven't seen it. Sounds great.
But, like, not giving someone medical...
Yeah.
Stuff. I mean, that was a vine, but this is real life.
And this is like thousands and thousands of people.
So he arrived in Genoa, Italy on April 11th, 1947, and was sent to a jail in Palermo, where I've been.
Well,
not to the jail, I've not been to the jail in. I've just been to Palermo. Yeah.
Didn't.
I forgot to tell you about that.
Just I was going to say about what then? No, it's... Right.
Yeah, I'll just make...
The joke's lost on me already, sorry.
Oh. On the 11th of May, Palermo Regional Commission warned him to stay out of trouble and released him. Ah, oh, stay out of trouble, you mob boss. Aww. I know.
Off you go.
In July 1949, he was arrested in Rome on suspicion of shipping narcotics to New York. On the 15th.
He just doesn't give up.
I know, exactly.
Live a quiet life. You've been given so many chances.
Yeah, exactly. At least 25 when you didn't go to jail.
Yeah.
On the 15th of July, he was released without, like, charges, but he was banned from Rome. So at least he got, like, some. So he's now been banned from America, Cuba. Yeah, yeah.
And, nowhere to
Well, he's restricted to Italy, actually.
Yeah. But even there, he can't be anywhere, everywhere.
On the 9th of June, 1951, he was questioned by Naples police on suspicion of illegally bringing $57,000 and a new American car into Italy. And guess what? Police. He was, without charges. In 1952, they revoked his passport because the US and Canada complained. And on the 1st of November 1954, he was required to report to police every Sunday, stay home every night, and not leave Naples without police permission for 2 years.
He did that to himself.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not. That's not me.
Oh, I thought you were like, this is terrible. How dare you?
No, it is terrible, but like,
no, it's not.
It's his own fault. Yeah, I'm saying he deserved it.
Mm.
So that would last for 2 years, and that was because of his alleged involvement in narcotics trade.
Yeah.
On the 26th of January 1962, he died of a heart attack at Naples. Oh.
Sorry.
That's okay. How old was he? Hang on. He was born in 1896. So he was 96. Six. He was 66. No.
Wait, when did he die?
1962. He was born in 1906.
So he was 66.
66. Wow. He died of a heart attack at Naples International Airport, where he was meeting American producer Martin
Goat Gosh, or did you just say it wrong?
I was going to say Gosh, and then I realised it's probably not. Martin Gosh. So he was meeting with him to provide information for a film based on his life.
Oh, cool.
So he died after that meeting. He did not know that Italian agents had followed him there to arrest him for drug smuggling.
Again, yes. His, like, 6,000th arrest.
I know. On the 29th of January, 300 people attend his funeral as his body was carried in a horse-drawn black hearse. And his relatives gained permission from the US government to take his body to New York for burial at St. John's Cemetery in Middle Village, Queens. And over 2,000 people attended this funeral. It's probably more than I'll have at mine.
Yeah,
definitely more than
probably more people than I've ever spoken to in my life.
Probably is actually.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Wow, that's so mean. No one cares about me enough. I'll have two.
To be fair, some of them might have just been sort of fans.
Yeah, mostly they were.
Yeah.
And also mob people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
People often debate whether he or Al Capone were better known or more influential. So it's generally regarded that Al Capone is more well known, whereas Luciano is more influential.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird that one's...
But it depends what they do, I guess.
Well, because of his commission, like, he could control every...
Yeah, but I know, mob. I'm just thinking that maybe Al Capone did more interesting things or something. Well, I don't know. Maybe at the right time to catch people's attention.
True.
Who knows?
I feel like Al Capone, like, makes a good textbook villain because he's got, like, he was quite violent.
Yeah.
And, like, he would beat people up and kill people, whereas this guy...
Instead of, what, getting other people to do it for
him. Yeah, whereas this guy got other people to do it. And he is viewed as one of America's greatest mobsters.
Wow.
The reason I find this interesting is one... Ow, I just pulled my hair out. Is one, the killings are so impersonal. I've put one and then I never put a two. So...
Okay, so only reason. Okay.
The killings are so impersonal, so... Whereas most serial killers, they have to be there.
Yeah.
But for these, you got someone else to do it.
It's sort of different,
but,
isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like a strange middle area where it's like, he doesn't... Like, serial killers generally enjoy killing people.
Yeah.
He's not like that, but normal people wouldn't kill people. He's got like a weird moral compass, in my opinion. Like, yeah, the fact that he won't kill...
What?
Like,
yeah, but that's just
protecting himself.
Protection and maybe some of the people he won't kill, like, for loyalty reasons. But it's all about advancing your position, I suppose.
I think I just find it weird that you can be, like, so emotionally cut off.
Yeah.
That, like,
yeah, but it's just about focusing on financial success and profit.
Yeah, I can't imagine being that, like, obviously yeah. I like money, but being that.
That's why you're not in a gang.
I also find it interesting how long it went on for, like, literally his whole life.
How they just let it keep going.
With very few repercussions, because yeah. the police were...
Like, considering what he did.
Yeah.
Even though they were, like, actively after
him. He had over 100 sex slaves. And no one cared. Well, so the police were bribed so easily. And how big of a problem organised crime was... Like, I find it kind of reminds me of, like, the deep web, dark web.
Yeah,
but, like, dark. How it's, like, a whole underworld. Like, they literally do call it, like, the underworld. But a whole world of stuff that's happening every day that, like, we have absolutely no knowledge of. I don't know. I find that so weird.
Yeah.
It's like an alternate universe of stuff yeah. that's happening.
True.
That's crazy. I also find it interesting because Prohibition, which was a government project, is basically, it's their fault that he become, well, but, it's his fault, no, but like.
But I think it's, I'm surprised, like, even after Prohibition and everything, because crime supposedly, like, died down a bit.
Yeah, it did for Al Capone, really.
But here, like, he's continuing this, like, criminal lifestyle throughout.
Yeah, true.
Doesn't seem to change it.
He just changes his tactic and moves on to different...
Yeah.
Like, areas of crime. So I find it kind of ironic that that's responsible. So, like, Prohibition was to end crime and it...
Increased.
Yes. So the information I got was literally just from Wikipedia because I tried using Britannica, but loads of it was incorrect, which is reassuring because all my history... coursework yeah. is from Britannica, so... Yay.
Is Britannica reliable?
It's basically Wikipedia, but it wasn't, like, super unreliable. It had most of the same stuff. It was just a bit weird.
I didn't know whether I could use it or not.
I can't use it for my actual coursework, but, like, my draft, it was okay. Right, thank you very much for listening. Sorry, that was really long.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back.
Hopefully next week if my brain cells have...
Hopefully we'll be recovered by next week and we'll be back with the next episode.
More comedy because we're hilarious.
Okay, right, bye.